ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
As the Prime Minister reminded us recently on LinkedIn, things are changing in Australian workplaces.
Happy Friday, Australia. This is your reminder that the right to disconnect is now law. Have a great weekend.
The right to disconnect laws are a year old, and they now apply to small businesses too. But are they doing what they were designed to do? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and this is ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Out-of-hours contact is still absolutely happening, as one anonymous This Working Lifer recently told us.
Leaders are still sending emails on Sunday saying they need something by close of business Monday. To me, that is a really clear indication of tight deadlines and excessive workloads and pressure that leads to stress and burnout.
And that's not their real voice. They were a bit concerned about being identified. So let's check in on the implementation of the right to disconnect regulations. What have we learnt so far? Anna Volkova is a people and culture leader at HR Platform. Hi, Bob. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
Your organisation conducted a survey on the right to disconnect. How many were surveyed?
So we surveyed 2,000 Australian adult workers.
And what were the key results, Anna?
Sure. So our key findings were that while over half of Australian workers were aware of their rights, just 3 in 10 felt confident enough to exercise them. Mm. I think this gap really allows an always-on culture to thrive, with a third of employees still frequently receiving work-related communications outside of hours, and 1 in 5 still felt pressured to respond. The other key piece of insight was that there's a lack of clear policies, with only 40% of employees reporting that their employer has communicated one.
So as a people and culture leader yourself, what does this tell you?
The legislation is a catalyst, not a solution. So laws can set a baseline, but they cannot shift workplace behaviour on their own. And culture and leadership are the real levers that create environments where employees feel safe, supported, and empowered to disconnect. And right now, an always-on culture is still dominant, which drives stress, erodes focus, stifles innovation, and really holds organisations back from the real productivity gains.
What do you think should be included in a policy on right to disconnect?
I think even before drafting a policy, businesses should talk to their employees and managers to investigate what are some of the challenges that they're seeing. And then in terms of drafting a policy, I think it's giving clarity about what are the steps that managers need to take to ensure that they're using tools like Delay Send, setting clear norms, and having open conversations with their teams about it as well. I think it's also what employees can do. So employees playing a key role in switching off their notifications after hours, setting and communicating boundaries, and also supporting colleagues to do the same. So I think the policy needs to have clarity around the position of the business, what role the culture and leadership needs to play, and then also what rights the employees have and where they can seek advice and support if they're feeling unsure or if these expectations aren't being met.
You mentioned leaders. How can leaders demonstrate their support for right to disconnect?
The most critical step I think that managers can take is open the conversation. They should talk to their people about communication preferences and agree on shared norms. You know, practical tools like scheduled send for after hours emails or encouraging people to switch off notifications helps reduce the pressure to respond immediately. But I think it also goes beyond the tools. It's about leading with empathy and recognising the employees as whole individuals. Do they have caring responsibilities? Are they working across multiple time zones? You know, how are they really feeling? And so I think by asking and listening, managers show that they care and build that trust. And the final thing I'll say, and I don't think this is done enough, is that we need to focus on outcomes, not the hours. This really helps employees prioritise when their workloads are heavy and reset expectations when things feel overwhelming. Then stay alert to the signals of strain. Are they sending late night emails? Are they visibly exhausted? Are there changes in their behaviour or drops in engagement? And act really quickly to provide support.
Thanks so much, Anna.
Pleasure. Thank you, Lisa, for having me.
That's Anna Volkova, People and Culture Leader at HR Platform. Hi, Bob. And later in Try This, we'll share some practical tips for how you're applying the right to disconnect in your own working life. Joining me now are Senior Researcher and Labor Lawyer for the Centre for Future Work at the Australia Institute, Lisa Heap. Hello, Lisa.
Hello.
And CEO of Council of Small Business of Australia, COSBOA, Matthew Edison. Hello, Matthew.
Greetings. Good to talk to you.
Matthew, what are your thoughts on the application of right to disconnect to small businesses?
There's a really key word in the way that this discussion has evolved and even was brought into the legislation, and that's what is reasonable. What is the reasonable expectation for when you send a message out? What is a reasonable expectation of their response? Your examples before came up with the email that's sent at 10 o'clock tonight might not require a response until the end of the following day. So it's quite clear and quite mutually agreed on what is the level of expectation to respond. From a small business point of view, we have mutually productive workplaces. We have mutually flexible workplaces. We have discussions between the employers and the employees about how do they want to work, how will they communicate, what is a reasonable expectation to respond. Where we get off the rails is when people start expecting unreasonable rates of response. Maybe they're expecting a response within seconds, and that's just not feasible if you're not in the same location in the same conversation.
Your members may only just be coming to grips with the obligations regarding the right to disconnect. It's pretty fresh for small business, but what feedback are you getting so far, Matthew?
Really, in the small business space, what we're hearing is this was a solution in search of a problem. There wasn't actually a problem in the majority of small businesses. Certainly there's the exceptions, and certainly there's the unreasonable bosses from time to time, or the unreasonable employees from time to time. But what we've heard from small business is we need some flexibility in communication, but typically we've talked about it when we employed that person. We've talked about it as their job evolves. Think of a restaurant that needs to cover the shift on the following day. Think of the employee who's looking for additional shifts. They've tended to open up, I think they're not quite in TikTok yet, Lisa, but they're using WhatsApp and other methods to have group chats to enable the level of communication needed. Other examples might be, though, where you've got a employee. They work in your warehouse or whatever, maybe they're on minimum wage. What's the expectation of that minimum wage warehouse worker to be available to take a phone call at 10 o'clock at night? That would border on the unreasonable. So it's all these sorts of discussions, and is the person paid according to being on call? We all know professions, some professions do have on-call loadings. They do have on-call expectations. Maybe you're a senior manager in the business and you're not paid minimum wage, but you're paid senior management wages or a high-level income. There's a understanding of, hey, sometimes you will be contacted out of hours, and sometimes due to the issue, we might need a response reasonably quickly.
Is it too heavy-handed on the regulation side? Do we need industrial relations laws to cover this? Lisa?
Yes, I think we did need this intervention in the laws. We know that Australia has a long working hours culture when you compare to other OECD countries. So a 2023 study that some colleagues of mine at the Centre for Future Work did estimated that those extra hours was around about 5.5 hours per week on average. And that's an extra 280 hours per year of unpaid extra time happening. So we did need to put some boundaries in, and we needed to put in that culture set, I think, that Anna spoke of quite eloquently in her introduction. That idea that this creeping into employees being always available needed some parameters put around it. And in fact, those examples of the conversation that Matthew was talking about is exactly what the legislation puts in it. It puts in those considerations of reasonableness, things like the level the person is within the organisation, what their responsibilities are, what the context is, if it's an emergency and those sorts of things. So I think it's quite a moderate compared to some other jurisdictions. It's a moderate intervention, particularly aimed at getting the conversations to happen at the workplace level. And I think that's really important.
And Matthew, just hearing about these conversations, which you're saying as well are good to have, does that mean that there's not too much red tape for small businesses? They're not going to sort of be drowning in these changes, really. It's conversations that we should be having anyway.
Yeah, we would comment that these conversations have been happening, and with exceptions, that they typically do happen because the employers and the employees want a mutually productive, mutually friendly workplace. What this has brought to a head, though, is some changes in the way that your employment agreement might look like. You might now have provisions in there that ensure the conversation has happened when you've brought that new employee into your business. So I don't really mind the culture shift at all and the amplification of have the conversations between the business and the workers about how should this job work, what works for the business and what works for the employee.
I just wanted to add another dimension that I think is not yet coming through in the research, but I think it's something to watch. I have access to a lot of young workers. And so anecdotally, I think these laws are important in also to teach workers. When you think about it, we've got a generation of workers coming through now who are used to being on call and on devices a lot of the time. So we've also got to put some of these boundaries around to teach this next generation that it's okay to switch off.
Let's zoom out a bit, Lisa. Why do we have these right to disconnect laws? What is it trying to achieve?
It's trying to achieve an idea that we have a balance between work and life and that we really should value that and everyone should value that.
Lisa, can you talk us through the right to disconnect and how employers should be trying to incorporate it into their workflows?
First, having the conversations at the workplace level, getting policies or agreements in place in relation to what is the circumstances within which they are available and where they should expect to not have to be available, what's the reasonableness in their context. And I think it's going to take a fair bit of training managers and educating managers. Unfortunately, in Australia, most of the international surveys tell us we are lacking in terms of the skills of our managers compared to their colleagues overseas. So we do need to actually do some work with managers about what are reasonable expectations, how you do manage a culture and a workload where you're not relying on availability to manage things. And I think then we also need to have the kind of creating the environment where people could feel comfortable to raise a concern.
Matthew, what are you seeing on the ground in terms of implementation or preparing for implementation?
So, Council of Small Business Organisations, through a government-supported program, has done a real awareness campaign under the label of the smallbusinesspeaks.org.au. What that website is designed to do is give small businesses common language explanations of some of these IR laws. So there's a whole section on right to disconnect. There's some fact sheets there. There's some simple language. There's some case studies there that help a small business just wrap their head around it, give some information they could pass on to their employees as well, just to raise the issue of we need to have a discussion if you think I'm being unreasonable with my communication requests or if you're feeling like you need to be connected all the time and it's not our expectation as the business owner. So it opens up those.
Lisa, from your perspective, do you have any examples of things that you've seen that work in practice?
The thing that works always in practice, in my experience, is the setting out the rules in advance at the local level. Organisations should really take seriously that idea of having that conversation with the workers and workshopping scenarios in this environment. Would that be seen to be reasonable? That's the thing that will make this work well. I think organisations often introduce a policy, they put it on their website or they send it out to their staff on their intranet or whatever they, way they communicate and they think, done. And that's not going to make the change that we need to see. So that conversation is the thing that will make the difference, in my view. Simple as that.
You're with Lisa Leong on ABC Radio National's This Working Life, exploring the right to disconnect with senior researcher and labour lawyer for the Centre for Future Work at the Australia Institute, Lisa Heap, and CEO of Council for Small Business of Australia, Matthew Addison. I've got a scenario. So What about an executive leader who sends great ideas by way of text messages whenever the idea comes to them? So it could be early in the morning, late at night, or on the weekend. They say, look, there's no obligation on you, the recipient, to respond at all. It's just that the idea pops into my mind. I don't want to forget it, so I'm sending it to you. Lisa, how does this sit with the right to disconnect?
This is where we go to that issue about management training and development, because those managers, those innovative business leaders need to understand that is creating a pressure and you need to not do that. If you've got the great idea, you put it in your email and you time your email to go when working hours start the next business day. That's really important that people got to get their mind to, because actually you've got to realise that does create the pressure. And if you're doing those things after hours, even if you say you're not expecting your employees to, they will want to be seen to be responsive. And so, in fact, you're actually sending a cultural signal that says, hey, why don't we have an exchange? Let's do this. And you may not even be aware that you're actually creating the expectation of the employees that they think that they should be engaging.
Matthew, of course, this should go both ways. So some employees actually want to work flexibly. They want to work outside normal hours, in quotation marks. So does that make it that much harder to apply the right to disconnect?
We're in this interesting culture, aren't we, Lisa, of right to disconnect, but I want flexible work hours. Maybe in my job I can do some of my job from home versus at the office. So we've got all these dynamics changing in the workplace. Mm. It comes back to what I've heard both Lisa, Anna and myself say. Let's have the discussions up front. You're employed in this manner. This is our expectation. What do you think is reasonable? Your example before opened up, is it a text message I'm sending at 10 o'clock at night, or is it an email I'm sending at 10 o'clock at night? For me, and maybe it's my generation, the text message, my phone is beeping at me, I'm hearing that notification, whereas the email at 10 o'clock, I'm actually have disconnected. I'm not watching or monitoring or responding to my emails. Even if I read it, I know my boss doesn't have an expectation that I will be responding at 10:05 at night. What's a reasonable expectation? What is a reasonable understanding between you and the person that's communicating with you about the level of response and the mechanism of response?
Lisa?
I'm going to disagree with Matthew on this. I think if it's outside of business hours, I mean, obviously some businesses do operate at 10 o'clock at night, so we need to be aware of that. But if it's outside of business hours, there's no reason for now with technology, that manager or employer not to be able to time that email. They might have written that email if they've decided that they want to write it at that time, but they can time it for delivery in business hours. It's really, really important that people understand the psychology. If you're a manager or senior manager in particular is sending something to you, it does create a cultural expectation of response or even reading it at that time. So we really need organisations to think through not just the kind of technical adherence to these rules, but how this might actually influence the way they deal with all of their communications with their employees. Managers in organisations really need some training and development about understanding the psychology of employees and understanding that even if they think it in goodwill they're sending those sorts of emails, they shouldn't be doing it outside of business hours.
What we've heard, though, is scheduling the email, I schedule them all to say send at 9 a.m. the next morning. The workers are now getting anxious towards 9 a.m. in the next morning because they're wondering what emails have been scheduled for them to receive at 9 a.m. So their anxiety level goes up. So I think Lisa and I are saying the same thing. Let's have that discussion so that we're setting a reasonable expectation. And this is what small business tell me. We need a mutually agreeable workplace. We need a mutually friendly and productive workplace.
Lisa, have we seen any legal cases yet?
No, we aren't seeing many legal cases coming through on the right to disconnect. And some people have said, oh, that demonstrates that we don't need the laws because there's no disputes coming through. I'm more hopeful than that. I'm hoping that the reason why we're not having these disputes coming through is because these conversations that Matthew's talking about are actually happening on the ground. So that would be really good. We haven't got a lot of Australian empirical research yet on this issue. We should be looking at it, and particularly looking at that issue that was raised about power dynamics and whether or not workers are still experiencing problems but are not raising them. But I'm hopeful that the reason why we're not seeing disputes coming through to the Fair Work Commission is because the conversations are starting to happen.
A recent academic paper looked at the impact of these laws in different parts of the world. What were the findings when it comes to employee work-life balance and the effect on organisations?
The introduction in the areas that were looked at by the researchers was that it was positive in terms of productivity for organisations. It was positive in terms of well-being of workers. And interestingly, they decided in their findings that it worked best where there were penalties on employers who didn't adhere to the rules.
Matthew, do we need more clarity from Fair Work to help with policy implementation?
I'm worried about a level of regulation where we try to create black and white lines. Fair Work have done a pretty good job, can I say? They've got good fact sheets out there, some good one pages, some good explanations. How do we implement right to disconnect? And what is reasonable expectation to look for a response from some communication you send out? I think we're in a good journey. I'm with Lisa. Let's see where we're at in a year and see whether any problems have emerged, whether there's been any unintended consequences by actually putting this out there in a legislative manner.
Thanks so much, both. Lisa Heap, Senior Researcher and Labour Lawyer, Centre for Future Work, Australia Institute, and Matthew Addison, CEO, Council of Small Business of Australia, COSBOA. Up next, get some tips for implementing the right to disconnect in Try This. In Try This, we teach you how to do things that make your work life better. On LinkedIn, I asked you how you were changing your work habits to reflect the right to disconnect. And Selena sent us this voice memo.
My work hours are somewhat flexible after 3 p.m. as my boss supports that I have school-age kids. So I often reply to emails that come through after that time, later in the evening, once they are in bed. But I deliberately schedule send the email reply for the next morning to maintain that normal work hour tone. And it means that I keep up to date with emails, but it doesn't impose on my networks after hours.
Good on you, Selena. And here's a tip from Jane. Jane writes, I set my work hours in my Google Calendar and Slack so I don't get notifications after hours. Super simple, but it works. Thank you. And Cassandra says, I start early and I finish early. Because of this, I often answer emails outside other people's work hours as well as outside of my own. Early in the mornings, I try to remember to use delay send. The right to disconnect hasn't changed when I worked, but it has changed how I manage other people's perceptions of when I work. And here's some tips for small businesses navigating the right to disconnect. Jeremine Alp is a small business founder and CEO of Corporate Diversity Pathways. She's done this in her own business and has advice for others as well.
So where do businesses start? The first step is to review your current policies to make sure they reflect the new legislation. Next, consider opening the conversation with your employees. Every person's circumstances are different. Work together to define what's urgent and important for your organisation and what can wait until the morning. Reset expectations and agree on what really requires after-hours attention. That way, everyone knows where it's appropriate and where it isn't. It's also a really good time to check whether there are roles in your business that genuinely require out-of-hours contact and to make sure your employment contracts reflect that, especially if roles and responsibilities may have shifted over time. At its heart, the right to disconnect is about trust and well-being. It gives employees the time and space to recharge, to set healthy boundaries, and to return to work focused and fully engaged. And for employers, it's another opportunity to create workplaces that are respectful, sustainable, and built on well-being, where everyone has the chance to thrive.
Thanks, Jeremine. So try these tips yourself or in your organisation and report back on my LinkedIn post. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast and share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, don't work too hard.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.